again, loyal listeners, and welcome to another episode of Objective History, where we bring history to life through the objects we left behind. Today's object casts a more somber shadow over the beginning of the 19th century, but just the same, it represents a time in human history that we have to own up to, accept, and learn from. And so it is with great pride that I would like to introduce our object for today, the Lily Jacobs album. This album, by another name, is known as the Auschwitz album. Let me start at the beginning and walk you through Lily Jacobs' amazing story. On May 24, 1944, when Lily was only 18 years old, she and her family and community were gathered up and transported on a train that would drop them off 2 days later on a ramp in the Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration death camp. On this ramp, Lily went through the process of selection. That is, the SS officers deciding which people could handle the harsh conditions of slave labor in the camp and which of them could not. Lily was young and healthy and cleared for work. Her parents and younger brothers, however, were deemed unfit for work, along with many of the other young and old people from her community. When she attempted to rejoin with her family, she was stabbed by an SS officer and torn away. Lily never saw her family again. She was quickly registered, deloused, meaning her head was shaved, given her new uniform, tattooed with her new identification number, and taken to her labor task. Lily survived Auschwitz, and when the Russian army approached and the camp was evacuated, she was passed to other camps and ultimately ended up traveling 400 miles to Dora Mittelbau. At this point, Lily was sick with typhus and weighed only 80 pounds. Because of her illness, some fellow prisoners carried her to a newly vacated SS barracks and laid her down while they were waiting for an approaching army to liberate them. When she awoke, she decided to explore the bedside cupboard, within which she found a framed photo album. Now, for a little perspective, it is estimated that 1.6 million Jews were killed at Auschwitz, and thousands of transport trains arrived at the camp during its time of operation. And yet, as soon as Lily opened the album, she saw a photograph of her own rabbi from her hometown. As she turned the pages, she kept recognizing members of her home community, eventually her family, and even a photograph of herself. This album is the only visual evidence ever found of Jews arriving in a camp and the processes that followed. Why was this photographer present on that day, and no others, and documenting the entire extermination process? How did this album end up 400 miles away from where the pictures were taken? It's unknown why it was created, or who the photographer was. It is theorized that it could have been two SS officers whose duty was to fingerprint and photograph the people who were selected for work. It wasn't created for propaganda purposes or for personal reasons. The people seen in these photographs were sent to the gas chambers shortly after they were taken, under the guise of a simple shower. Their bodies were cremated and their ashes were thrown in a nearby swamp. The album details the whole process, except for the killing itself. The album tells its own version of what happened that day when Lily and her family arrived at Auschwitz. The photographer followed the passengers deemed unfit for work who were sent through the gate of the camp into the main proper, which led to the crematoriums. In the photographs, the buildings and chimneys of crematorium 2 and 3 can be easily seen, while fences block the view of the open burning pits. Lines and groups of children and elderly women wait to be taken to crematorium 4 and 5. A group waits outside of crematorium 4, resting among some trees after their long journey. The photographer also followed the belongings that were taken from the Jewish people. These bundles can be seen amassed in a corner of the ramp, bereft of owners. Trucks laden with bags of goods drive past lines of people waiting outside of gas chambers. These goods were taken to an area known as Canada, believe it or not, where they were sorted through by veteran inmates under the strict eyes of SS guards. Moms and dads, siblings holding hands, babies sucking their thumbs sitting on mommy's lap. Humanity, they stare straight into the camera. It's clear these people have been through a terrible disruption, and they're in shock and exhausted. Yet it's just as clear they have no clue what awaits them mere hours, maybe minutes, into the future. They aren't aware of the inhumanity that surrounds them. I highly suggest taking the time to look into the album and viewing the photographs yourselves. They hit harder than words can ever describe. Lily eventually moved to America with her family and the album. Survivors would frequently come to see it, and sometimes when someone would recognize a face, Lily would give them the picture. Most remained unclaimed. In 1980, Lily was convinced the album would be safe in Yad Vashem in Jerusalem, which is the World Center for Documentation, Research, Education, and Commemoration of the Holocaust. And that's where the album is today. I don't know about you guys, but I find myself thinking, how could this happen? How could anyone view this and be okay with it, let alone join in? This is where the history behind the object becomes important. The Holocaust didn't just spring into being. Its construction can be traced through an examination of the time period leading up to it. At the end of World War I, Germany was utterly defeated. They lost their army, they lost their land, they lost their pride. Under the weight of the huge debt levied on them by the Allies, their economy plummeted, and they experienced the worst inflation of any civilization ever recorded. What had once amounted to life savings wouldn't even buy a loaf of bread anymore. Meanwhile, the U.S. was booming with the Roaring Twenties, and they offered a series of loans to Germany to allow them to pay back their war debts. This created a chain of money from the U.S. to Germany, to Europe, and back to the U.S. German nationalism had a difficult time swallowing this reliance on the people who had laid Germany so low in the first place. The situation begged for a scapegoat, some place for people to place their blame for all that had led to Germany's current state. Enter right-wing extremists, among them a man named Adolf Hitler. They asserted the Jews as this scapegoat, blamed them and their supposed conspiracies for everything that was wrong with Germany. This dawned the creation of the Nazi Party. The government at one point actually banned the Nazi Party, but Hitler was so successful at smooth-talking that he had it reinstated. Hitler was nothing short of a charismatic genius. He always knew the right move to make, the right thing to say. There was no other word for it besides genius. As Hitler and his party grew in power, he was eventually elected as Chancellor of Germany. Through this position, he was able to brainwash and terrorize the German people under his command. To do this, he harnessed the power of industrialization and technology. Industrialization had taken off in other parts of the world starting in the 1800s, but Germany's general public lacked access to many of the goods that were available elsewhere in Europe. Part of this was due to the expense of the products and the average earning rate of the German worker, making it impractical for the purchasing of these goods. To this problem, Hitler conveniently provided the solution. He forced the creation of cheaper goods that could be widely consumed. Most important among these was the radio. Hitler controlled the broadcast that these radios could listen to. They couldn't receive shortwave signals, and foreign broadcasts were quickly made illegal. While building German nationalism through his campaign to provide a better standard of living for the German public through the availability of goods, seen as luxuries, Hitler simultaneously created himself a captive audience for his propaganda. And the propaganda didn't stop there with the radio. Oh no, it blew up way beyond anything you could think possible. If Hitler was a mastermind of persuasion and smooth-talking, he was nothing compared to his minister of propaganda. This man turned murder into a good thing. He devised a censorship program and controlled every book that would be published. Textbooks were rewritten to support the Nazi message, and newspapers were strictly controlled by the propaganda center. There were even specially created, openly anti-Semitic movies produced and promoted to the general public. Something important to understand is that German nationalism did not necessarily grow out of the idea of shared geographic location, but rather from a set of principles such as shared language and culture. It's not so difficult seeing that being twisted by the Nazi Party into creating strict divisions between groups of people. The Jews weren't seen as German citizens because they were different, they were other, they didn't share the same culture, the same values. Germans were good and Jews were bad. This is the message that slowly wormed its way into the German psyche through the manipulation of technology. This idea of persecuting the other in societies is not unique to the Nazi Party, and sadly, neither is genocide. It has continued all around the world in various places and various times, but every time masses of people are persecuted and destroyed for reasons they cannot control. Since the Holocaust, there have been genocides in Australia, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Guatemala, Bosnia, Rwanda, Darfur, Sudan. Genocide is not a dead term. Genocide is a living, breathing problem. If you're interested, I suggest you take a little time and look into these genocides, some that are occurring even today. I hope I've opened your eyes a little bit today about the events and historical climate that led up to the Holocaust. For now, I leave you with the lesson that humanity can become a monstrosity, and it is up to the common, everyday citizen to make the difference. The Lily Jacobs album is all that is left of the people who died on that day in 1944. The only traces left of them are black and white photos in an old book. Where is the justice for them? The justice is in us, who will remember them and pass on the lesson of the Holocaust to future generations. Thank you for listening to this episode of Objective History, and remember, as always, that the things we do today become the history of tomorrow. Until next time, listeners.